cosmology is built on that illusion. The real is what I can see, touch, look at. And in order to draw back from that position, I need to be healed of the animal fears and desires that lead me to take that spontaneous orientation towards the real. Because let's face it, for a cat, the real is. The already out there now, that can be seen. If it can't, the cat is bored and goes to sleep. Seen and heard and tasted and so on and so forth. And to the extent that my own psyche is gripped by animal fears and desires, I take up that same kind of spontaneous attitude towards what's real. And if it doesn't somehow move me in the areas of my fears and desires, I tend to regard it as unreal. And so to the extent that I'm in the grip of unfree emotion, I'm going to take up an animal criterion of what is real. But to the extent that I'm freed, I will be able to use my mind to raise questions. And through answering questions, that's the way I come to discover fact, what is real. By answering, raising and answering intelligent and reasonable questions. So, as my affectivity is freed, I'm able to wait until the evidence is in, before I claim what is the truth. That's just one instance of the role of affective freedom in intellectual conversion. I'm able to wait until the evidence is in. But once the evidence is in, I'm able to judge. But if my affectivity is bound, you see, I'm either jumping to conclusions, or even when the evidence is in, I'm afraid to judge because it's going to mean something that I don't want to face. I'm going to be indecisive or rash in my judgments to the extent that my affectivity is unfree. Have I said enough about intellectual conversion that you know what I'm getting at in its relationship to affectivity? The technical treatments of it, the best technical treatments that I know of, and, you know, are in Newman's The Grammar of Assent, John Henry Newman, The Grammar of Assent, Michael Polanyi, Personal Knowledge, and the most technical presentation is in Insight. What is intellectual conversion? Those of you who want to pursue particularly the whole philosophical discussion of the criterion of what is true and real, those would be the places I would recommend that you would go. Newman's Grammar of Assent, Polanyi's Personal Knowledge, and if you've got about 2 years, Long of Insight. Also Paulo Freire, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, Intellectual Conversion in the Social Dimension of it, how he is weaning people away from a criterion that the real is already out there now and you know it by taking a look, and encouraging them to raise and answer questions as the means of discovering the truth. So it's freeing their minds from the oppression of the misconception that the truth is known by mere stimulus response. He's freeing them from that and giving them a trust in the capacity of their own minds to raise and answer questions and through that process come to an affirmation of what is true. So Freire, I think, is making a significant contribution to intellectual conversion and putting it right into the context of social liberation. Alright. Psychic conversion and its twofold significance. So that's, see, this is how the healing movement reaches down to the second and third levels, truth and understanding. Our consciousness does not begin with the level of understanding, but with the level of empirical consciousness. And so for the healing process, to reach through the whole of our consciousness, it has to reach down to that basic level of spontaneous feeling, sensation, perception, emotion, imagination, and so on. And make a change there. The movement of divine love as it permeates further and further into human consciousness has to touch this empirical level as well. Changing, for instance, the images through which we organize experience. Now, this is how are we to understand this movement of healing to the level of empirical consciousness? It's a bit complex. I'm going to take a little bit more time on it than I did with intellectual conversion. First of all, I want to speak about the need for this further movement. The need for it, if conversion is to come to term in a transformed person. Conversion is to work a transformation of the person, why it has to go to this level. The first reason for the need for it is that it is very, very easy for human consciousness to become split off from the empirical level and to start giving an understanding of my own behavior that in fact is out of sync with the sensitive movement in my own behavior. In other words, it's very easy for me to be caught in the illusion that I'm doing things for this reason when in fact I'm doing them for some other reason. The split, I'm talking here about the split between consciousness and the unconscious, as that is talked about in depth psychology. We need to discover the psychological determinants of our own behavior. Very easy for us to ignore the possibility that our behavior might be motivated by different factors from what we think is motivating our behavior. If there's anything that the whole tradition of Freudian psychology has made clear, we are incredibly capable of delusion about ourselves. Building up a self-understanding that in fact is simply a cover-up, deceit, a lie, or what is really going on in ourselves. That's the first reason for the need for the conversion to reach to the empirical level. What does it do when it reaches to the empirical level? It releases into consciousness images that enable me to discover what is going forward at that level of psychic spontaneity. It dissolves a tendency that I have to repress certain images that could lead me to the truth if I would follow through on them. I repress them and I don't take them seriously. Psychic conversion is basically a dissolving of what Freud called the censorship. I factor out certain psychic elements. I repress them, I deny them, I will not face them as I try to understand who I am. Certain psychic elements, which in fact may be very powerful in determining my motivation, I factor them out, I repress them, I censor them, I cover them over. Now that censorship operates right here between the first and second levels. It blocks out. I won't face that. I will not allow that image into my consciousness. And so it blocks out a whole area of data that I could use as material to come to understand myself. The censorship does that, the repressive censorship. What would be some indications of the possibility of the repressive censorship, or the reality of the repressive censorship? The hidden, lurking question that a person may have with regard to whether what he or she is doing is really worthwhile. The feeling of uneasiness. One represses that feeling of uneasiness. One represses the suggestion, whether it comes from oneself or from others, that maybe one's life could be quite different. One were not locked into a one-track pursuit of, let's say, personal ambition, whatever it might happen to be. I just will not allow into my consciousness certain images about myself. Or, my psyche may very well be still living in a pattern that is childishly dependent on others. And I may be doing all sorts of things that I may consciously think are heroic, but I may be doing them in order to satisfy my own sense of self-esteem, or in order to win the approval of others. And I won't face the possibility that that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I repress that possibility, and I repress all the images and all the feelings that could give me, that could open up that possibility for further pursuit. Just drop them up. I censor them. I don't face them. So, the whole tradition of psychoanalysis has made it clear, despite the fact that I don't agree with the interpretive framework of Freud, he has made it clear that we frequently are kidding ourselves about the motivation of our behavior. We think that we're doing things for self-transcendent reasons, and in fact we are doing them for the sake of our own satisfaction, for the sake of improving others. We're projecting, for instance, onto others, our own mother, our own father. This happens in religious communities. A religious community is a surrogate mother or a surrogate father. And I'm doing all sorts of things for the sake of the religious community, and I think that I'm doing them out of love and self-sacrifice and so on, and I'm really doing them to please the mother or father that I never was able to please as a child or an adolescent. I'm still trying to work out that drama. Still trying to work out that problem. It's still unresolved, but I've taken it and displaced it onto the religious community. It's all sorts of forms of respect. And so there has to be a dissolving of that censorship that would block the images, that would open me up to the possibility of my own inauthenticity. That's one of the ways of coming at the need for this. We are, if consciousness and the lower areas of consciousness, which Freud calls the unconscious, are not in a synchronicity with one another, are not in harmony with one another, complementing each other, then there is a rift, a psychic rift, between consciousness and the unconscious. And to that extent, consciousness from this point on up, from level two on up, is kidding itself. It's creating its own world, unless it is in harmony with them. The underlying flow of psychic emotion, images, sensations, and so on and so forth.
See? Could that be organized the way I've been doing it in my head as neurotic self-transcendence versus real self-transcendence?
Yeah, it's neurotic. It's Herbert Fingeret. Do you know his work, The Self and Transformation? He defines neurosis as the product of the cumulative misinterpretation of experience. Neurosis is the product of the cumulative misinterpretation of experience. This is exactly what I'm talking about here. I interpret my experience as being self-transcendent, when in fact, it's still a matter of the other. That's what would be one way of cumulatively misinterpreting experience. You can cumulatively misinterpret experience in many different ways, but this, and I'm just trying to suggest some things. So, in order then, to put it positively, in order for a person to have the insights, second level, and make the judgments that I need in order to know myself as I am, I need images that accurately reflect my situation. All insight is into images. Images present and organize the data for insight. In order for me to have the correct understanding, I must have the appropriate images to work with. If my understanding of myself is a matter of understanding images that I've created somewhere in between level 1 and 2, then my understanding of myself is not going to be correct to that extent. If I've created the image of the self-image, let's say out of some fear or desire, I've created a certain self-image, and then I understand myself by understanding that image. My understanding to that extent is inadequate. I must be provided with images that reflect my situation as it is, if I'm going to have trustworthy insight into myself. I must be given images that present the data of my life as they are, and not as I want them to be. The images that I'm dealing with, again, images of myself, images of others, images of situations, can be distorted. They can screen off elements that need to be included if I'm going to be dealing with my experience as it is. To the extent that I'm working with a distorted image of myself, my self-understanding will be erroneous, and my self-constitution as an existential subject will go astray. To the extent that I am working with a distorted image of myself, my self-understanding will be erroneous, and what I make of myself will go astray at the existential level. Okay. The distortion of the image can be willful, but it can also be beyond my control. It's been going on for as long as I can remember. It's been imparted to me by my parents. A distorted image can be an image that makes me think more of myself than I ought to, or an image that makes me think less of myself than I ought to. But it's distorted. It's not accurate. Okay? The images will be distorted if they leave out elements of experience that have to be included if my insight is to be on the mark. If they leave out relevant data. Okay. All images of myself are going to leave out some things. The question is what they're leaving out relevant or irrelevant? If they're leaving out relevant data, the insight is not going to be on the mark. If they leave out irrelevant data, it doesn't make any difference in any given situation. So the question again might be, what's been left out in my image of myself? What's been left in the dark? In other words, what I'm trying to say is here, we have to partialize our experience. We can't deal with the whole thing. The question is, what am I leaving out as I partialize my experience? Am I leaving out things that have to be included if I'm going to have the insight that I need in this situation to make the decision that has to be made in this situation? You see what I'm getting at? You're going to have to leave. You cannot mediate the whole of your experience to yourself. If you tried to do it, you wouldn't be doing anything else. You've got to leave certain elements out. The question is, are you leaving out something that's relevant or irrelevant? And if you're leaving out something that's relevant, are you doing that because you don't want to face it? Or you want to face something else? So that the whole question of depth psychology is, what are you leaving in the dark about yourself? You're going to be leaving some things in the dark, but are you leaving in the dark things that must be brought into the light for you to make of yourself what you want to be? For you to make of yourself the person who can operate creatively according to the levels of the creative vector of consciousness? Are you following what I'm saying to this point, the need for a psychic conversion, that is to say, the need for contact between consciousness and the unconscious, or intelligent consciousness and the empirical level of consciousness, for those to be in communication with each other. That's what I'm talking about. The need for that commerce, that conspiracy between consciousness and the unconscious as I make the story of my life, as I create the story of my life. Yes, David.
It just occurred to me there's an interesting bow to that notion of the end of St. John. I suppose what we haven't told with Phil how many books in the world, mm-hmm. right? They've just included enough the idea that there's so much more, but it is possible to just get relevant to that.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true about ourselves,
right?
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
And see, under a given situation, I really want to concretize this thing. Because this is the way the psyche works, and this is the way psychic conversion works. In a given situation where, let's say, you're forced, you have to make a certain decision. In order to make that decision, you need a certain knowledge of the situation. That's your second and third levels of consciousness, the understanding and the judgment about what's real in this situation. Only some of the data of your experience are going to be relevant to that. Not the whole thing, you know. You're trying to decide whether or not you're going to go visit your family for Christmas. The relevant data are the data that have to do with that whole situation, and not, you know, the experience of obviously there are lots of experiences that are not relevant to that decision, but it's being in touch with the experiences that are relevant to that. Thing. In other words, the censorship is not a purely negative thing. The censorship can function authentically by leaving out the things that don't make any difference.
Well, Becker talks about that.
That's right.
You either take off too little or too much, you're in trouble.
Right. There is a real function of that censorship. That is to say, leave out everything that's irrelevant. But when the censorship starts operating in such a way that it leaves out what's relevant, that's where the trouble comes. And Freud's whole point is it's doing that all the time because we have those wishes, those fears, those compulsions, and so on,
that will not let us face some of the relevant data. But the censorship needs to be moved away from resistance, and this would be another way of describing what I mean by psychic, a shift from resisting relevant data to accepting. Shift that occurs at the censorship level. What will I allow into my system? What will I deal with? What will I face? That's what the psychic is all about. The melting of that resistance in censorship and the willingness to accept the non-faith. Yeah.
Can you give me an example of that? I have two friends who are leafleting over the weekend in a mall against nuclear energy and especially against nuclear arms. A nuclear physicist came up and talked. There was no way that he could accept any arguments against building nuclear reactors. But the interesting thing was his background, where he came from an Eastern Bloc country. His whole argument was, we have to build these because